Penguin Random House Audio presents Dream Teams, Working Together Without Falling Apart. This is the author, Shane Snow. The foreword is written and read by Aaron Walton.
Foreword by Aaron Walton, activist, model, and founding partner of Walton Isaacson. This is Aaron Walton. When I was in third and fourth grade, my grandfather used to ask me, "What will you do today to make the world a better place?" Every morning when I saw him, I knew that's what he was going to ask me. Growing up a gay black kid in Massachusetts in the 1960s and 70s was not the easiest. I was in Roxbury, a rough part of Boston. But every single time I saw him, Pops would ask me the exact same thing. Not what will you do today to make your life better, but what will you do today to make the world better? And I've got to tell you, I remember thinking, that's part of my job. On my journey, I became very aware of the massive power that working as a team has to make something bigger and better than just myself. Because of how I grew up, I've always felt the need to be a leader and to help move things along. But I also realized that progress is not a solo journey. That philosophy has been how I've approached everything. For example, when I started my latest company, my partner Corey and I sat down with an ambitious mission. What if we wanted to create the planet's most interesting agency, we said. When we sat down and mapped it out, the first thing that we worked on was not what clients we would go after, what creative work we would do. Those are typical things that agencies start with. Instead, the question we asked ourselves was, what team of people will be able to reach this vision? We decided that if we got the right kinds of different people in the room and we tapped into their unique points of view, that would be what got us there. We believed that ideas could be pushed forward in a more productive and innovative way if you have a team of people with diverse backgrounds. And not just culturally diverse, but also by discipline. I knew the research that shows that teams like these can be more successful because different people have to work harder to get their points across. When we're with people who aren't like us, we have to marshal more resources and brain power to help convince other people of why a different direction might be the right direction. And this helps us break through. Over the years, we've put this into practice, and we've built a team that is truly different and truly does have some of the planet's most interesting work, furthering social causes while building businesses at the same time. When we pitched and won a Super Bowl campaign, for example, we weren't successful just because of the idea. When we made a viral video showcasing Hispanic Americans taking pride in their work and heritage, it didn't go viral just because of the concept itself. There are billions of great ideas. It was how our team worked together that made these things happen. It was about how we brought that great idea to life by tapping into the zeitgeist of the people in our group. Real innovation comes from our differences. Ideas get better when we challenge each other. But here's the thing. It's not comfortable. It's messy. It's like a Pollock painting. It looks like chaos. As humans, we want to avoid conflict. The tension points between us make us better. But getting it to work right is hard. That's why I'm excited about this book. I think we're much stronger collectively than we are individually. If you think about every great breakthrough in the world, it's genuinely linked to when people have been working as a team, when we've been thinking about, what can we do that's going to make life better for someone else? Am I naive to think that that's the way the world should work? We're all trying to get to our mountaintop. And once we get to it, we're looking for another mountain to climb. To make that journey, We need each other. The answer to my grandfather's question will be different every day for each of us. The fact that we need to do it together will not. And when we win, we'll all win.
Incipitus prologus. Dream teams. At the height of the Cold War, the Soviet Union and the collective nations known as the West competed over practically everything. Politics, technology, chess, math, going to space. But there was one arena in which there was no competition. Hockey. The Soviets owned that one. Between 1960 and 1990, the Soviet national hockey team won nearly every international match it played. And that's the dullest way to put it. The Russians destroyed. In the 1976 Olympics, for example, they trounced the United States 6-2, mopped up Finland 7-2, and beat Czechoslovakia in the finals for the Olympic gold medal. Their fourth gold medal in a row. The Soviet coach was a freak, a legend, a Zen master on ice. Anatoly Tarasov was his name. He made his young athletes study chess and dancing. They practiced jumping off walls. They learned to do ninja moves wearing skates. They sang songs with lyrics like, "Cowards don't play hockey." Tarasov's mashups of athletic and mental conditioning made his students see the world, the whole world, as relevant to hockey. Another freaky coach followed, Viktor Tikhonov, a Soviet army general who was known for his dictatorial style, ruthless 11-month-long practice regimens, and the hatred his players had for him. Out of this ice dojo arose a group of athletes that would go down in history as not just one of the world's best hockey teams, but one of the best sports teams of all time. They were called the Red Army. Here was their most famous starting lineup, known as the Russian Five. Vyacheslav Slava Fetisov, defenseman. Natural-born leader and decorated hockey god. Both charming and terrifying, quote, like a bear. Said to be one of the greatest players ever. Alexei Kasatinov, defenseman. Disciplined, patriotic, and unflinching. Fetisov's best friend on and off the ice. Vladimir Krutov, forward. Known as the Russian Tank. Standing 5'9" and weighing close to 200 pounds, Krutov was a beer keg on skates and the reliable soul of the team. Igor Larionov, center. Called the Professor. Larionov was cerebral, a tactician. Skinny and deceptively tough, his specialty was misleading opposing players. Sergei Makarov, forward. Makarov was a sniper, feared by goalies everywhere. He could find the back of the net from anywhere on the rink. They were backed up at the net by legendary goaltender Vladislav Tretiak, known for his stoicism and quick thinking. And this doesn't include the dozen other talented players in the club at a given time, each with his own fearsome quirks and specialties, such as longtime team captain Valery Vasilyev, who is known for punishing opponents while hungover from partying all night, and even once finishing a game after having a heart attack on the rink. You get the idea. They were monsters. But it wasn't just a stack of great individual players that made the Soviet team dominate. North American teams were known to scout young hockey players from junior leagues and groom them for the pros from absurdly young ages. Canadian pro hockey players tended to be flawless skaters with big muscles. During much of the Red Army's winning streak, Canada actually had players with better individual statistics on its national team, such as the legendary Wayne Gretzky. No, it was their style, the Russians insisted, that made their team special. No matter who was on the ice, opponents claimed the Red Army could read minds. It could be Fetisov and Kasatinov defending the net as one, or champion center Sergei Fedorov circling the defense.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?